Jam. Hello and welcome to Dynamite Ready. It's the retro games podcast where a couple of owl pals get together and talk about a couple of owl games. The voice you're hearing just now is myself, Mick Clockerty. Joining me, as always, we have Mr. Andy Mack.
Konnichiwa.
And Mr. Mick McCormick.
How's it going?
And as always, we've got Smudgy the Rabbit here listening in by my side. Boys, it's 2024. I know last time I talked to you was last year and all that, old man patter. What you've been up to, what you've been playing?
So, I've been playing a game with a slightly awkward title of Spark the Electric Jester 3.
Mick, somehow I knew you were going to say that.
We won't go into that. This is a game made by a fellow called Lake Fepard, who I know from the Sonic fan games community. I've kind of dipped back in and out of over the years, just wanted to see what's going on over there.
It's a Sonic fan games username if ever I've heard one.
Absolutely. So he made two games called Sonic Before the Sequel and Sonic After the Sequel, which are some of my favourite of these kind of Sonic fan games, some of the most kind of professional and well done ones.
Yous have name-dropped them on this podcast before, I'm sure.
I'm pretty sure I have. And the one where we just did all the kind of retrospective of these games, those are ones that I wanted to highlight. But after that, I think you probably realised that there is no money in making games based on somebody else's IP.
It's been done before by people from that very scene. Well, they create a physics-based platformer.
Yeah.
Just a different wee IP.
Freedom Planet, was that one of the ones? But they tend to make bangers.
Aye, so he made a couple of games. He made one game, Spark the Electric Jester, which was basically a Sonic game with the serial numbers filed off with his own wee character on it. And then he made a sequel where he's tried to do a take on the 3D Sonic games, the modern Sonic games. The second one didn't quite hit the mark, but the third one is brilliant. It's basically a modern sort of 3D hyperspeed Sonic game, but done right.
Aye.
Nay bugs, nay. I've kind of fallen out with these games in recent years. I've not really played them recently, but it's hard to put my finger on what is so much better about it, but just everything about it feels so much smoother, so much more polished, and it's just much more fun.
Even for looking at a wee 15, 20 second clip, it looked like the Sonic and Shadow levels for Sonic Adventure 2, but maybe a bit better.
Aye, pretty much. You never kind of feel like you're on rails, you never feel like the controls can take away from you, and it's like more about the spectacle. Like, you're moving fast as fuck, but you're always in control, you've always got all different moves that you can pull off. Everything about this wee guy just seems much smoother to control than your average kind of modern Sonic game. I'm thinking, I played a wee bit of Sonic Frontiers, I lost interest in it. You never feel like the control's been taken away from you when you're going like on rails or you're going up loop-de-loops and all that. Some quite kind of creative levels as well. There's one which is set in a city during a protest, and there's like a big kind of crowd of like faceless people, and that's like kind of an obstacle or you can kind of bounce off in the game and that.
I hope we Sparks no gain protesters are doing, man, on behalf of like the cops or something.
No, I'm not really following the story very well, to be honest, but it's against some sort of totalitarian regime. It's all good.
Right.
My only kind of complaint would be that there's, I feel like he's getting like too many moves, like too many things you can do. Like there's kind of combat and there's all sorts of different boosts and dashes and stuff like that. But it gets a bit too much at times. But also I feel that it's probably because it's designed for folk that really like these kind of modern Sonic games and want something like a bit more challenging. But if you like Sonic Adventure 2, this feels like a better successor than anything Sega can pull off. It's even get the Knuckles bits. It's even get bits where you've got to find 10 fucking treasures, yeah, and it's not shite.
Well, Sega should hire this man, because the last
I don't think they should, because I think they suck the soul out of these people.
right.
Well, you might get one mania out of them, though, before they become husks.
Well, this is what happened the last time. The two guys done something similar to this, where they created something that was better than what Sega could make. I mean, right now, what the fuck is Sonic and his AAA titles, what is he? Right now we're at fucking Zelda, fucking Breath of the Wild, so where does it go for? I don't fucking know. But it brings us on to a game I've been playing, which is the sequel to Sonic Mania, Sonic Superstars.
Oh, Andy, I believe we've actually got something of a retraction here, because you might have suggested that there was Sonic 4 vibes about this thing.
Aye, definitely. I didn't think it looked up to much, and it's because I was stung by that fucking shitty Sonic 4 game, a mobile game with terrible physics.
It was about 15 years ago, let it go.
I couldn't, and it looked the same as it, and that's where I went, this is going to fucking suck fucking considerably sized donkey appendage. But I played it, and it was fucking magic, man. Me and the wee man played the two-player on it, and whatever they've done... As you know how you used to play like two player on Sonic 2? And only, it was only really Sonic that was playing it because like, it was shite going tails, wasn't it? You could have jumped in the boxes. Well,
you had what I quite like was wee brother controls, I call it in my head. Well, you're playing the game and they get a feel like they're playing the game, but they're not playing the game.
Aye. And Sonic 3 could maybe like, utilise them tails to lift you and that. But in this game, it's got a new system where if you go off screen, you just press a button and you appear on it again.
Aye.
So the momentum just keeps going, and sometimes you're at the front and then sometimes the second guy's in the front, and you act together, fucking, you can, Tails can just pick Sonic up, drop him, and then you can run on. And if you hit a wee speed bump, the second player will come on. It's fucking brilliant, man.
You could tell, see for the messages you were putting on the chat, and there's a couple of videos of you and a wee man sat next to each other on the couch. You could tell yous were both just fucking pure faces lit up, beaming like that. Oh, this is magic.
Level design was brilliant. Some stuff like for the old games, is, but with new stuff as well. So the levels weren't just your standard. It starts off in like a green kind of forest and then goes to space. There was other things happening in this game as well that was pretty interesting. Like Pac-Man at one point and all that. It was...
Yeah, I've seen that,
but I really enjoyed it, but I don't even think I've got any gripes. Bosses were brilliant, but where this game actually is completely different from other Sonic games is its emphasis on multiplayer. I've always felt that 2D Sonic games always had a kind of lack of good multiplayer options.
It was always an afterthought.
Aye, man, it was always like something you never really went back to. There was always something wrong with like a frame rate or something wrong with like, it was shitty wee levels, like. It wasn't full levels, it was just like crap wee that like, squashed down versions of the real McCoy.
Do you know, for some reason, that shite versus mode for Sonic 2 that had like rang music that sounded worse, some of the tunes are stuck in my head and I don't know why.
I quite like the Balloon Park one.
Well,
maybe it's because they've not got Michael Jackson behind the decks. They're not tainted by him.
Some of the tracks for Sonic 3 2 player. Ones are brilliant, but the actual levels are fucking absolute fucking horse shit. This game is different in that it's built around multiplayer. I think you can play up to like four players, but we only played two. The best bit of this game for me, in regard to the multiplayer sections, is see if you go to the special stage in this game.
Aye.
It's a race, man. It's a race between the two of yous.
Are we talking a half pipe style special stage, a blue spheres style? What is a special stage?
No half pipe, no blue spheres. We're going to way back to 1991. The old original special stage is based on.
Oh, I like that, yeah.
It's a region. But it's a race. So the two of you start at the same position and you've got a race to the medal you collect. It's a lot of fun. You do like three different versions of the level and it's like the best of three wins. It's a fucking good laugh, so you're wanting to get into special stages as much as possible, just because of how fun it is.
So this is a game that you've kind of reevaluated your opinion because you can't fully understand it without playing it multiplayer. That's a theme that we might be revisiting later in the episode.
I would say so. They've done really well at getting Sonic Mania, changing it into 3D, well 2.5D, but they've managed to retain the old Momentum Engine, you know, as Momentum Engine.
What I've been curious about is, I think one of my boys gets a run out in this, who was also in Mania. I'm talking, of course, about Knack the Weasel / Fang the Sniper.
He's there.
Because he shows up in it, aye?
He's there, man. He's there, no, he's fucking gory, aye. Wee prick, by the way. He's always at it. You don't really, when he turns up, you're like, what's this guy's fucking story, man? He turned up in Trouble, and he's turning up in Sonic the Fighters, and he's always good, but he's never my first choice. He's not my second choice.
When Knuckles in Sonic 3 and Knuckles is like destroying a bridge or, you know, sending a boulder after you or whatever and laughing about it, he thinks you're evil. When Fang / Knack does these things, he's just a prick. He's not brainwashed or nothing. He's just, that's how he behaves.
A wee purple wank fuck. But there's another wee guy called Trip which harks back to a very kind of famous experience I had on this podcast. You and Eddie Heads will know what I'm talking about.
How many's Mrs. Grace, aye?
But Trip's a fucking bumper. It's a wee guy who wears a hat. He just looks like bog standard Sonic character. Like, remember that fucking stupid Cream? That cunt.
Aye.
And the other things, kind of orange thing. It's the ones that don't really stand out. It's not like Shadow.
Is he an animal? Have they just given up on the animal thing now? Is he just a generic Sonic character?
I couldn't fucking tell you, man. I lost interest. I completed the game. This wee helmet keeps showing up. Wee's helmet on throughout the game. And I'm like, who is this guy? Even AJ, my wee boy, was like, who's this guy? And I was like, it doesn't matter, son. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
You forget all about him, son. He's dead to us.
You save him, you know, and then his helmet comes off, and he's just a... I tried to control him. He controls a lot like Vector the Crocodile for Chaotix, and that his jump is, like, hollowed out, and he can sort of climb up fucking... What is that? Vector the Crocodile is much cooler than this guy.
You boys quite like Vector, too. He get quite far in the Sonic Showdown.
I'm just saying, man, I think Vector Crocodile has been done a heavy wrong turn with guns like Tripper turning up and upstaging them. But this is a nod and a thumbs up to, as you said, Taxman and Stealth, who rejuvenated the Sonic series with Sonic Mania. This is essentially the sequel to their baby. And I like the way it's going. I do like the way it's going. We've had Sonic Mania, let's try something a bit different. And they've really done well with this one.
I don't think it shares any personnel with the folk that made Sonic Mania, but maybe the normal kind of folk that make Sonic games maybe looked at it and went, oh, we need to get our act together a wee bit here. Maybe it gave them a bit of a boot up the arse.
That's it. And it's really shown up the AAA side. This is like the B side. You know how you had A side and your B side on records? Well, this is the sort of B side. But the fucking B sides are upstaging the fucking A sides at this point. When was the last good fucking Sonic game, AAA Sonic game? But now we've had two in a row that are fucking good on the B-side. I would just put everything on the B-side, man. Just try and fucking make a classic. Because all the tools are there, man. That momentum engine is not going to be beaten. And they should just go for it, man. Just do something good with it.
The future's bright for 2D classic Sonic then, you reckon?
Yes, I would say so. And it's safe for another generation. Because my wee boy enjoyed it as much as I did when I was six. It's good to see, man. It's good to see. And especially after that experience playing Sonic 4, when I seriously, like, you know how like sometimes you can hear River Clyde shouting on you, you jump in it?
Well, I was with you that night where we tried Sonic 4, so I do know what you're talking about.
Aye. Aye. And there's no air bubbles in there. They're just fucking... He's the death. Sure.
Spunk bubbles.
That's probably a bit in bad taste, but that's the way I felt, man.
Ach, well. The only thing I've been playing, obviously I've been Steam Decking it up. You don't need me to talk about fucking Baldur's Gate 3. Everybody's talking about Baldur's Gate 3. It's very good. The wee thing I do want to highlight, you've probably heard of this already if you're an indie heed, particularly an indie horror heed. Mr. McCormick has actually played it previously as well, but it's a wee game called Faith. Or Faith, the Unholy Trinity. Andy, this is one I'd love to show you. See, when you see the graphics, it looks like it's for the C64 or the Atari or a BBC Micro or something.
Aye, it's even got that kind of CRT effect, basically, when you're playing it on an old telly. And it manages to convey a very creepy atmosphere with, like, very fucking limited-looking graphics.
But I think the limited graphics add to it, right?
Aye.
The digitised voices that it uses are creepy as fuck. It's a game where you play as an exorcist as well, Andy. So, you know, you're fulfilling one of life's greatest fantasies, holding up crucifixes to demons and saying in nomine patri et filii et spiritus sancti, etc.
Does any party take part in Knocking Darrow Street?
No, well, not yet. I've not played Chapter 3 yet, but the other brilliant thing about it is these horrific rotoscoped animations that just look pure bogging.
That's the jump scares of this game.
Aye. And all you can do is either hold up your crucifix to ward off evil or pick up notes and read notes, and you need to fill in a lot of the lore and the backstory yourself, and it just ticks a lot of boxes for me. So, Faith, get it checked out if that sounds like... If you're marking a loser.
It's possibly one of the hardest opening lines I can remember from any game where the main character says, what I'm about to do is not sanctioned by the Vatican.
Aye, I love that.
Well, a banging George Michael tune as well. It's my favourite songs.
You're making me miss Jota now. Right, we'll dive into our normal games for the week then. I think we're going to kick off 2024 with a guy that I think goes kind of hard. He's overlooked sometimes in the Sega pantheon. Mr. McCormick, why did you pick Vector Man for myself?
So I remember seeing a review of Vector Man, and I promise this is the last time I'm going to bring up Sonic, right? But it was in Sonic the Comic, which I used to get from my dad's newsagents every week. And there was a review of a new Sega game. This was at the very tail end of the Sega's lifespan. A review of this game called Vector Man. And you've seen this kind of cool-looking, 3D-looking cyberpunk dude fighting robots. The graphics look class. It seemed like such a cool atmosphere. So when I got hold of emulators kind of later in life, I remembered Vector Man and I gave it a bash. And I remembered quite enjoying it. So we're always up for a bit of Mega Drive nonsense in this podcast. So, yeah, I thought, why mess with what works?
I remember Vector Man just... the PlayStation was kind of just coming out at the time. And I remember, like, oh, this is a PlayStation car just because of the way it looked. And I remember it was like, oh, about its visuals. But I might be wrong.
Well, no, you're no. But we'll get into that in a wee bit. I've been aware of Vector Man for a long time. Although, I don't know about yous, but I never knew anybody that had this. Too late in the Mega Drive. I think many people had games that came out this late.
No, absolutely not.
You're talking, this came out in PAL territories in November 1995. The reason it stuck with me is I actually didn't mess about with this on emulation, but on, you know, one of these Sonic Gems collections on like GameCube and PS2 and all that?
There was two of them. It's like one was like Wii, I had like Sonic CD and that on it, like some
Sonic Fighters and stuff.
Aye.
One of them, for some reason, had Vector Man as an unlockable, and me and Aaron really get into the idea that we had to unlock Vector Man, so we collected all the medals and that in order to unlock Vector Man, so that's when I played it.
It's weird that it would turn up in one of those. I'm pretty sure it's not a first-party Sega game or a Sonic Team game. It's maybe some mob called Blue Sky Software who I've never heard of.
Blue Sky Software. I think that Blue Sky... Sega relationship was what you would call second party.
Right, I see.
Like Rareware and Nintendo, which we're also going to get into because this was Sega's answer to Donkey Kong Country, which gives us a wee bit of serendipity in this episode as well. The world of Vector Man, I'll kick off with a plot. You've got a kind of robotic dystopia. The year is 2049. Planet Earth has been polluted to the point where it's uninhabitable. Humans have taken off into deep space and they've left behind these robots, or Orbots, they're called in the world of Vector Man, because they're made of boz, they're made of wee orbs, like Vector Man himself. So the Orbots get left behind to clean up the planet, which might also be the plot of Wall-E, I can't really remember. Raster, the head of the Orbots, somehow accidentally gets linked up to a nuclear missile and he goes fucking rogue. Takes over all the other Orbots and kicks off a rebellion against the humans. Vector Man has been away doing a mission on another planet, and he comes back and every Archon has gone rogue and is kicking off, and he takes it upon himself as the only loyal Orbot left to take them out and fight for the humans to stop the nuclear missile.
Lovely.
Aye. Well, presentation-wise, that was the big seller for this thing, right? Put yourself in the mindset of a kid with a Mega Drive in 1995. The animation in this would have fucking blown your mind.
Aye, it's got kind of a pre-render 3D look like Donkey Kong Country, but it somehow seems a bit cleaner. It's kind of somewhere between that and like traditional sprites. I'm not 100% sure how they've pulled it off. It's quite a unique sort of look.
Do you know what it really reminds me of? And it really reminds me of across the board. It was huge at the time. Earthworm Jim.
Aye.
Just the way it looks. That vibe, Donkey Kong Country, where they're trying to do like a pseudo 3D vibe.
Earthworm Jim was an animated sprite, but it gives me Earthworm Jim vibes as well, just because Earthworm Jim was 2D, but he was very busy. You know, he had a lot of wee idle animations. He was very fluid. And again, he was quite late Mega Drive as well, particularly Earthworm Jim 2.
Big sprawling levels and that as well, not?
Aye. So at the end of the SNES and the Mega Drive's life cycles, Donkey Kong Country was a bit of a game changer. That was seen as a big leap forward in terms of SNES can still do this. Look at these pre-rendered 3D graphics you can get on your SNES. Do you know what I mean? We're not done for a count yet. That was Rareware working with a mob called, was it SGI or something, I believe. So Sega really took this to heart, and they thought, we need to show that the Mega Drive can do this as well. So they linked up with, as Mick says, Blue Sky Software in order to make their own game with these kind of pre-rendered 3D models. And that's how we get Vector Man.
Aye, he's a wee bit like Rayman in that he's like hands and his arms are only connected to his body. There's these kind of orbs, as you said.
Aye.
That kind of allows you to do kind of dynamic looking things. His arms kind of stretch about and like it will kind of morph, like his body will kind of morph into different shapes, different forms and that. For when you collect power ups and stuff.
You could power ups to turn him into a drill or like an amphibian. And
he's interesting looking. He is interesting.
He's a cool looking thing.
I catch his vibe, but the only thing I would say is he lacks personality. I like my mascots to have a bit of personality. And don't get me wrong, I like when he does his wee kind of Phantom of the Opera bow at the end of the levels.
Aye.
But he's still kind of, he looks like a kind of half-drawn Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
I was saying to Mick, the plot of the game and the look of Vector Man himself, it's a dystopian science fiction thing, but it's a very 90s like dystopian science fiction thing. Like, the plot of this game in the 90s could have also been the plot to like an advert for cereal. Do you know what I mean?
The 90s was a weird kind of time, right? It was shortly after the fall of the Berlin Wall, the time we were folk called the end of history, where ideas of politics and left and right kind of weren't there anymore, but also everyone was really preoccupied with like the apocalypse and like the environment collapsing and all that. So, like, I think that's kind of where this comes from. It's a very different type of dystopia where it's not, like, a totalitarian government or something like that. It's just, like, fucking there's robots everywhere.
Software glitch, do you know what I mean? Y2K was one of the big things that got everybody going mental.
Well, the 90s, the 90s turned from, like, Russia's going to kill us all to mere, like, it's going to be an asteroid.
Climate change is going to kill us all.
An asteroid. The Terminators are going to come, man.
Aye, fucking Adam Curtis talks about this. It's like everyone in the 90s was anticipating some sort of apocalypse and then eventually got it in 9/11. But until that time, they were all, it was a weird vibe.
What's with these fucking levels, man? The on-rails things? They're fucking mental.
Let's not jump ahead.
Okay.
Let's not spaff our loads. I wanted to get all the presentation stuff out the road before I get into the gameplay stuff, because we've got a mixed experience somewhat here. So the only other wee thing I wanted to get ticked off was to say that the tunes in this are banging.
Yep.
It's a great example of playing to the Mega Drive sound chip's strengths. Mr. McCormick will probably be right into this aspect of it, but basically you've got a, sounds like an apocalyptic robot rave. It's almost like Yuzo Koshiro-esque.
Aye, very metallic, very heavy beats, that sort of thing. The Mega Drive definitely excelled at that. I mean, at this point in the Mega Drive's lifespan, I think they were kind of realising that that's what you want for a Mega Drive soundtrack.
Gameplay-wise, Vector Man has got responsive controls. He's got a decent jump. They throw a double jump in, which I'm always a big fan of. He's got an arm gun cannon thing like Mega Man. Number of power-ups that give you like a spread shot, a burst shot and things like that. It's all well and good, but for me, Vector Man is too hard. On a subjective front, I'm shite at Vector Man.
I've got to agree with you there, and I had forgotten how hard this game was before I dished out, so I apologise for that, but
No.
I was doing fine until I got to that first boss, who just flared me like, over and over again.
We had a few games last year where we talked about maybe not really being able to get into them as a youngster, and then coming back to them for this and it clicking. I'm in my 30s and I don't think Vector Man has clicked yet. You know what I mean? This game genuinely nearly grannied me. I thought I wasn't going to be able to get past the first boss, which is probably the ultimate embarrassment for Dynamite and Eddie. I got past it eventually. Andy, to come back onto your point where I accused you of spaffing, yeah, the level design of this is, it's too big. You've got these giant cavernous levels. You're supposed to take this at a slow and ponderous pace and sort of explore rather than going in and just blasting everything like Gunstar Heroes. The levels are fucking massive. They're full of secrets.
This always happens at the Mega Drive and I don't know why. Like, the something about Mega Drive platformers where all the levels are like as high as they are wide and there's no need for it.
Aye.
See, Vector Man, right? I can remember it vividly, right? See, when you pass the first level, it shoots you onto a thing that absolutely fucking blows you away. It's like, it's on rails, right? And there's this big fucking thing, it grabs on, starts spinning about, and it looks like a 3D game.
It's so cool, game. Man. When you get the sick...
But it only happens once.
No, those tank rail levels happen a few times. Oh. I can't really speak to that because I've no been past level 4, but level 2, you're a tank and you're on, like, it looks like a roller coaster track, and there's a giant mech that's like climbing along below you, and you need to jump over its horns and keep blasting it, and it looks fucking magic. The level only lasts about 20 seconds to... If you keep just blasting at it,
you're just half a fucking cartridge, man.
It's got a really cool effect because it looks like the camera's kind of panning around at different angles, but they're just doing it by kind of moving sprites around cleverly, and it's a great idea, but because the level, basically, you can die like within like a quarter of a second of that level, like they don't give you time to get your bearings and go, right, how do I do this, how do I figure out the controls, it's just like, bang, you're dead.
It's the closest thing to Mode 7 I've seen, but the way it looks... I don't mean it looks like Mode 7, but it looks like they're trying to do something like that. But that's thought outside the box, and they've created a kind of third dimension in a way that I've never seen since.
There's a lot of cool stuff in this. There's a lot of variety here. The water levels also are the shite. Like, I like the wee kind of submersible aquatic form Vector Man can turn into. My main gripe with this is that I think this big exploratory... sort of taking your time with it level design feels counterintuitive. When I'm a big robot, I want to run about blasting. I want Gunstar Heroes out of this, I think.
Aye, you want a roller coaster.
Aye. As I say, I'll hold my hands up. I've not been past level 4. I don't think it's a game's failing at all. I don't think it's a sprouter or anything like that. But it also leaves me feeling a wee bit like I don't really... care about getting better at it. See, comparing it to a similar robot dystopia game in Mega Man X, where if I fail at Mega Man X, I get this wee impetus to go,
I'm doing that again.
I bet you if I tried that level again, I could get a wee bit further and a wee bit further and I can beat it. When I get beat at Vector Man, I go, I get fucking wrecked there, man. That was miserable. I don't really want to play this anymore.
Or you can get lost and shit. And that's like these big, massive, sprawling levels. Like same thing used to happen in Earthworm Jim as well. Similar vibes for this game, like just the way it plays, the way it looks, and the huge levels of movement and projectiles, and right down to collecting the wee power ups.
I like your boy Jim a fair bit better than this, I must say. I would stick up for it more. I'm no slating Vector Man, by the way. I think this comes down to my own shortcomings. I think this is a good game. It's just on this occasion, I'm the baby and I'm bad at computer games. So there you go, I'm holding my
hands
up.
It had to be you sometimes.
The way this game looks, so think back to Kid Icarus or Flitty and then look at this fucking thing. You know what I mean?
How far we've come.
Absolutely amazing.
Again, I think it's an impressive technical feat and I don't think it's a bad game. I think it controls well. I think maybe it just doesn't gel with me. I don't feel like I want to get better at it or that I necessarily want to really see what's coming next. I've had my first four levels here. I've died a lot. I've gave it a good couple of hours and I didn't hate it all. But on the recommendation scale, I would say if you're a Sega diehard and you like a challenge and you've never heard of Vector Man, maybe look at it and give it a shot. Otherwise, probably skip this one and you're no missing much.
Is that right? You think this had a sequel? No, that baffles me because this was right at the tail end of Mega Drive's life. I mean, most of the games looked like this at the time Mega Drive died. You had Comic Zone, Dynamite Heady.
Yes.
You had the games like Toy Story and that. They all just looked amazing.
Vector Man 2 was a year later, 96.
Fucking hell, man. Everybody had moved on to Resident Evil by that point. They're still in their room playing Vector Man 2. I don't think that happened.
I never knew there was a Vector Man 2 until I like booted up the Steam Deck and it was one of my list of ROMs. I was like, holy shit. Like, but yeah, I can't imagine anyone played that one.
Man 2, even more fucking graphical juice, I guess was the tagline or something.
Hey, well, we're going to be doing this podcast for a while, so maybe in 4 years' time one of yous will get it. Right, we'll move on to our next game. Mr. Andy Mac, why did you pick Snowboard Kids for Mr. Mick McCormick?
N64 had these fucking things it could boast about modifying the environment. It looked fucking spectacular. There was a game called Wave Race 64 that was amazing because you seen them waves all moving about and The N64 pulled it off brilliantly well, and it was dead addictive and cool to play and amazing to look at. In the same way, it had a snowboarding game, which was, at the time, amazing to play. I just had so much fun with it, and it reminded me of Mario Kart a bit. It's called Snowboard Kids. It's a game I remember fondly. I never had many games. I rented this one out because I think it must have cost maybe £1,080 or something like that.
Aye.
Well, I had a lot of fun with this game, and the way it looked, the way it played, and the music was, for me, class. So I remember, it just came to me in a memory one day, and I thought, I'm going to get this one ready. So how'd you get on with it?
Aye, so I've always liked snowboarding games. I've been a fan of them because they make me feel cool, and they make me feel like I'd be able to do that in real life, which I absolutely can't. I've tried to fail miserably. So I was looking forward to playing this one. I was a big fan of the SSX games in particular. I love playing all of them.
They are crackers.
Yeah, banging soundtracks and that as well. This was a time in the mid-90s where everyone was going through a kind of extreme sports phase. Roller skating and fucking skateboarding and all that was really cool. Snowboarding was really cool. You had all these games that had a kind of edgy, cool sort of street type of atmosphere, and we all kind of
they chucked it into Final Fantasy VII for some reason and that.
Absolutely,
oh,
yeah.
Aye. Sonic Adventure.
Aye. They all had like pure rocking music or like techno music or that. So this is the N64's kind of take in this one. The developers of this game, Ragtime, I think I'm pronouncing that right, based in Japan. I don't think they got the memo really about the kind of street sports sort of vibe, because this is an incredibly cutesy game. It has all these quite distinctive looking wee characters, the snowboard kids.
They've got phallic noses.
That's the first thing that kind of jumps out to you. They've got this very distinctive design. I kind of imagine them being in like a newspaper cartoon or something. But they've all got these ginormous fucking schlongs.
in masks that look as if they belong in the National History Museum. They've got like a big like, massive beak. But the upper class would wear them, like them weird fucking Epstein.
Oh, like masquerade ball masks.
That's what they kind of look like. They look like they're all wearing them.
Some of them do, but some of them are mere bulbous.
I hadn't seen any of this before, and I've just Googled it for the first time, and I hate them.
But the snouts are pretty spectacular. I mean, they're well textured. The N64 gets the best of them, and, you know, I enjoy looking at them. You don't really see them for the front very often, so for the back, they're very interesting, but definitely for the front, they're all about the snout.
I like that penguin, I will say.
The penguin features quite prominently, actually.
I think the big beak is to keep them up if they fall over. They can just bounce themselves back onto their feet again.
Well, they've all got very low centres of gravity, so that definitely helps with the snowboarding. So you play as these wee kids, and there's not much of a plot or anything. I think they're pretty much just all on the slopes, having a good time. It's all very light-hearted. You could describe this game as somewhere between SSX and Mario Kart. Probably more Mario Kart, to be honest. Most of the kind of race modes will be familiar if you've played Mario Kart. I guess the main difference, obviously, between that and a normal racing game is because it's all downhill. You don't have a brake button as such, but there's quite a clever way of controlling it with a joystick, where if you pull the joystick like front and left, you're kind of turning, but also kind of maintaining your speed. So if you go back left and right, then you're slowing down, but you can do wider turns effectively. If there's kind of bits where there's kind of big corners and that, you slow down. That's how you slow down effectively.
I like that.
Yep, you can do wee jumps, and then while you're in the air, there's a couple of tricks you have access to. You can do grabs and spins. That part of the game is very limited. It's not really about the tricks so much. But what happens when you do tricks in the air is you get coins, and you can use the coins. You need those to buy the power-ups, so your kind of Mario-style shells and stuff like that. You spend money on them, so that's quite an interesting wee twist on it.
So you have those pre-equipped before a race starts, rather than getting them in the middle of a race?
No, you do get them in the middle of the game, but if you run into the box that has them and you don't have enough money, you'll bounce off the box and you'll fall over. You don't get them.
But you're keeping this game, man.
Aye.
So you've got to constantly be pulling off a wee bit of this and that in order to get access to your equivalent of like blue shells.
Yeah, which is quite a fun kind of twist on the idea, actually. I quite like that.
I don't mind that, aye.
Yeah. So you've got your power-ups, and you get access to two of these at a time. There's like a left and a right one, red and blue boxes, respectively. Some of them are pure projectiles that you need to kind of aim at the baddie and fire at them. And then the other ones can be kind of more generic power-ups that do a variety of different things. It's a good balance between like actually being a good racer, but also actually kind of judiciously using your projectiles and power-ups. And some of them are quite fun. Some of them actually would be quite good fun in multiplayer. So for example, there's one where you fire a parachute at the enemy, and if it hits them, they fly up in the air, and then they fall back down at the course very, very slowly. And that's one where I can imagine if you're playing it in multiplayer, you'd be like, oh, for fuck's sake, just waiting for you to get back down on the race course.
If you're sitting next to somebody on a couch, that's violence guaranteed.
Did you find the game was like, you know how Cool Boarders was a bit janky, man, but it was cool because you could play like a snowboarding game going down the hill in multiplayer? Did you find this game was like tightly made? Like, there wasn't a lot of jank in it. Like, it was fun to play.
Aye. I mean, no complaints in that sense. I don't think the controls were weird or unexpected at any point. Like, the basics of the game, it's fairly straightforward, but it's all pretty solid and it all works quite well. It's quite fun, kind of bombing down the tracks.
It's an Atlas game. It's an Atlas game, and they're kind of renowned for having like high-quality games, aren't they?
Yeah, and usually games that have, like, fucking demons and, like, abominations against Christ in them, which this game doesn't really contain, unless you count those noses.
That's demonic snouts of a last seen one.
Aye, absolutely. That's the kind of main race mode. The other little thing that I quite like about that, it's a small detail, is that you do laps of the course, but obviously it's all downhill, so what you have to do at the very end is land on a little entrance to a ski lift, and then lift you back on top of the hill.
I used to love that.
And that's a wee element of the game as well. So if everyone is like going down at the same time, then you're all kind of crowding in to the slopes, and only one person can go at a time, which is quite a good wee twist as well.
This game was built for the four player. Obviously, these games were still toys back then, and this was built for the four player.
This sounds like it would be very good crack local multiplayer, and it's maybe not the first instance we've heard of a blockbuster special for a young Master Andy Mack sitting playing it on his Todd, where it would maybe have been served better by, I don't know, some fucking other cunts kicking about. Is that the case?
Adding this to the long list of like Neddy games that we need to revisit together when we're in the fucking once in a blue moon when we're actually in the same house. Because I think this would be great crack on four player. I mean, I can't really judge whether it makes any sacrifices in the four player aspect.
Oh, there are rubber bandits in it. The Mario Kart's got.
There's definitely rubber banding going on. I wasn't quite sure what was going on when I was playing F-Zero X. For this one, it's pretty noticeable because the players in front of you never get that far ahead of you, which I don't mind anyway, because I'm not an amazing racer, but I also became quite a dab hand at the power-ups, so I got quite a few snidey victories where I basically was being trailed, but then I could fucking fire a rocket someday or fire the fucking weird pans that just hit everyone in the heat, like instantly stops everyone, which is a bit of a killer.
That aspect of kart racers of doing somebody dirty is like at least half the enjoyment for me. See if somebody thinks they're about to overtake you in Mario Kart, nah. You slam a wee banana down or something and go, oh, fuck you, get it up, you man. I love that feeling.
I think this game realises this because that's quite an integral part of it. The fact that you can have like two different kind of power-ups on the go at the same time, and the fact that it can be complete game changers, definitely adds to the fun of it. And I forgot my favourite one, actually. This is one of the non-projectile ones, but when you get this power-up, it looks like a wee mouse. I think it's a wee rat. He's a rat because you press the button and a wee rat appears on everyone's screen, and he does a wee dance, and then he shakes his arse at the player, and then they lose all their coins, and you get them all, so, which is pretty enraging.
The Brendan Rodgers power-up.
You can see the logic behind that power-up, makes complete sense, which is fucking great. I like the downhill aspect here. Like, you've not got an accelerate button, but you do have power-ups that make you go faster.
And yeah, there's a wee fan in the back of your board, and one that slows down other players as well.
That's right, and the more you kind of manoeuvre your guy to keep on a downward trajectory, yeah, the faster you go. I think it's pretty good, man. I think it's got a pretty good thing going on. It's really fun to play for me. And I like how you just patch snow halfway through the game.
Yeah, so that kind of leads quite well into like the kind of structure of this kind of story mode. It's not even really a Grand Prix either, but you basically get a selection of different modes you can play as when it's in one player. you can do a bunch of different races, those regular battle races, they call them. And when you play those, if you're first, second, or third out of four, you get prize money and also all the coins you've collected, which makes using the Brendan Rodgers power-up even more satisfying because you'll get like even more money. But crucially, even if you've collected a million coins, if you come fourth, you get none of them. So you kind of just snide out of it that way. And you can use those basically just for upgrading your board. So there's a wee bit of a kind of road rash thing going on with that, which is I quite like. But I also would have liked more things to spend your money on. As well as those modes, there is a couple of kind of special trick modes. So there's one where you get money from doing tricks, and the course is like half pipes and stuff, and various kind of wee bits where it's more advantageous to do tricks.
See, I didn't enjoy that mode as much. But
I wasn't very good at it. I don't think the physics engine was really designed
for it. This engine isn't really designed for tricks. It's a racing game.
Exactly.
I think that the other game, I mentioned it, when 1080 Snowboarding was all about tricks and that. That was more like a realistic game. But this is all about your racing downhill. It's Mario Kart on ice.
Aye. The one bonus mode that I did like was a shooting mode where you have to go do the track, but you have to shoot like 100 snowmen or whatever, and you get points for each one you do, and you get like infinite projectiles, and that works out quite well because the projectile kind of firing works quite good, so it turns into like almost turns into a shooter, which ends up being quite fun.
I really like this game. Honestly, it's one of my fond memories of playing games when I was a wee guy. I got a lot of enjoyment in this game.
Do you ever for Dynamite and Eddie? You've got the game you pick for somebody, and then you've got the game you've got to play, and then there's the other game. Sometimes I'll look at the other game, sometimes I'll play through the other game, but there are other times where I don't even... I haven't so much as Googled Snowball Kids, right? Sometimes I'll go in completely blind because I think it makes you ask certain questions about it and maybe get the discussion going a wee bit better and stuff. But see if you're listening to talking about it, I think it sounds like a fucking cracker.
It's a
filter. I rarely play the other game as well, unless we have like an extended amount of time in between recording, or it's something I really fancy playing.
Aye.
But yeah, this one is pretty good fun. As I say, I think I probably would have enjoyed it more with 4-player. I've got an idea in my head about how fun it will be in 4-player, but I maybe can't do it complete justice, but have only played the single.
Well, listener, that brings us on to, if you can send us in an email... And if you've been listening intently, tell us me, Andy, and McCormick's blood types, because the info is there in older episodes. You will win tickets to come for a steak dinner with us and then play Snowboard Kids.
The fucking class, so, man. Yeah,
I get it in.
A beautiful game, and the music is fucking incredible too.
The music is good fun. As you said, it's got a bit of a Sonic vibe to it. Kind of upbeat, dancey, sort of cheery music. You also did mention that the game patches ice, or patches snow for one level, which is quite fun. It's just like summer, and it's just grass you're going down. My favourite level, in terms of theme, not so much in terms of playing it, because it's quite hard, is like a, I think it's called Disneyland, and it's like an amusement park. And there's different segments of the track that are based on different rides. Yep. There's a bit like a flume, and there's a bit of this like the teacups and that. That's pretty cool, but most of the other ones, it's just somewhere snowy, which is fair enough, I guess.
It's one of N64's sleepers, this game. I remember at the time, I've been in people's wee piles, the ones that had N64s, but I'm talking like two or three people. But it's under the radar, but it's fucking good, man. I love Snowboard Kids. I'm a Snowboard Kids stan, man. I like it.
But yeah, Snowboard Kids, it's good crack. I would say if you're into your kart racer type games, you'll probably enjoy this. If you're into snowboarding games, just have the caveat that it's maybe more of a kind of fun, casual sort of thing. But yeah, if you find yourself with an N64 or some way of playing N64 games multiplayer, then give this one a wee bash.
I do believe that if a proud Donegal man says something is good crack, that's the highest praise. Well, aye, that brings us on to our final game of the episode, which is Donkey Kong Country 2 Diddy's Kong Quest, which I picked for you, Andy.
I just got that pun.
Aye, well, apparently a lot of people think the game is called Diddy Kong's Quest, but it's not, it's Diddy's Kong Quest. The reason I picked this for Andy, I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to sit here and tell yous, that I knew how good this was. I handed this off a wee bit offhand. I thought, Donkey Kong Country, they're decent, I think. I know the second one's meant to be the best one. I'll start Andy off with a platformer. He likes platformers or whatever. Little did I know that this is an incredible platformer, because I've been playing it as well. I don't know if Andy's going to have reached the heights of love for this game that I did in the last couple of weeks, but I'm dying to hear how you got on with it, Andy.
Donkey Kong Country is one that I've never really spent much time with. I'm not going to lie, I've never really been a fan of how these games look.
I'm the same, I think. I don't like that pre-rendered style. I much prefer a traditional sprite, a cartoon character looking cunt. Sonic the Hedgehog, let's be honest.
On previous episodes, you have slated Donkey Kong Country, like, unforced. Like, it's the poor game. It's like, I didn't even say anything, and then you're slating me. Like, we're talking about completely unrelated games, and Andy's like, it's not like that fucking Donkey Kong Country, that's for sure.
A few Donkey Kong Country encounters were brief, and that I remember one good thing about it was, like, you could scoot along a level, and it was like a chain of events, and it was fast paced. I remember that, but I couldn't get by art style. I was too tuned into my 2D pixel art, and I was a dyed in the wheel fucking Mega Drive heed that didn't like Nintendo games very much and stuff. But I'm a changed man these days. I'll try in, and this game didn't disappoint at all. I went into it thinking, right, this is often cited as one of the best platformers of all time. First thing I do when I get a platformer is check out how the movement is. When I turned this on and started it up, I says, right, let's see the jump. And I could tell for a minute I pressed the button, this is going to be tight, this is going to be good. You get a good meaty jump and landing when you jump on things and stuff. And I thought, this is going to be fucking alright, by the way. We're going to be good. We're going to get a right good go, and we're going to have fun here.
You've got a decent wee kind of moveset. Well, the two of them, I suppose, the game has, you've got two players on the go. Any given time that you can swap between, you can kind of pick the other player up and throw them and put in that.
I think me and Andy are both Dixie CSC, but I'm sure you'll go on.
Well, I don't know much about your Donkey Kong lore, right? I know he's Feather. His old man was in, like, the first Mario or something. It was his game that Mario first appeared in.
Well,
that, and he's...
do you know the owl cunt that you go and talk to called Cranky in this, where you go and, it's called, like, Cranky's House or something. You can give him coins and it tells you secrets or something like that. Mm. He is meant to be the Donkey Kong fae, the Donkey Kong game that chucked barrels at Mario. So that's not Donkey Kong. No, apparently that's Cranky.
And the protagonist of the first game is his Wayne. Is that Donkey Kong Jr.?
I think Donkey Kong was Donkey Kong Jr. at one point, but is now just Donkey Kong. Diddy, I'm not sure whether or not Diddy is his wee brar or his son.
Well... aye, that's what I mean. You know, it's all over the fucking place, isn't it? It's hard to get behind these guys. See, these characters go, right, I'm going to get fucking belters for saying this, right? But are they a bit naff?
You are just biased because of the Scottish meaning of the word diddy.
No, I get what you mean with... So Diddy Kong, I think that Rareware designed him. I think the British... second party developer Rareware wanted to make Donkey Kong a sidekick, and Nintendo were funny about that kind of thing. They're off a precious about keeping their IPs and, you know, designing their own character.
Right.
Like, but I think they made Diddy Kong and Nintendo signed off on it. But I've got to admit, I kind of like his style. I think I was saying to you, Andy, he's got tap end energy. I like the angle he wears his cap. I like the angle he wears his cap at.
I like that. It's like 2006, like Ned looking at it. I like where you kind of, when they used to make an arch out like the front end.
Aye, kind of bend it up the way.
I think that possibly my problem with the whole Donkey Kong character thing is that Diddy Kong was never fully fleshed out, and then they started introducing all these other characters, and then by acting, you're kind of powered out.
I'm just going to put it out there, right? Diddy Kong, lot of cousins, lot of uncles, big family. Are the Kongs Catholics?
Aye, I think they probably are, and you're never really quite sure how certain ones that are always run about are related to each other, but they just are. Although Dixie is his girlfriend, she's no related to them.
I don't know anything about them, but what I do know is that Dixie Kong controls 10 times better than Diddy Kong because she has a helicopter move.
Dixie's glide is, as I said, maybe controversial on our chat, but I think I like it even more than Knuckles is.
Well, there was times in this game, right, the jumping was brilliant. You jump on a baddie, you got a wee kind of crunching, bounce off him and all that. The movement of the baddies is placed to perfection to give you a challenge to try and get by the obstacles. But what I would say is, I found times where Dixie's helicopter was mandatory to get by a part.
I found that as well.
Can you get past parts in this game, such as the bees, which are the fucking bane of my life in this game? Can you go over them without Dixie's helicopter? Or is there a way to time it and use the platforming engine, which is fucking solid, to get past?
I think you can get by basically anything with Diddy, but it's harder. I found myself, do you know sometimes if I lost Dixie and I was at a hard bit and I knew I wasn't going to get a barrel for ages to get her back, that I would just reload my save and go back a good bit so that I could get her back.
Is it that last save of Pandemonium? The double jump gives you a wee buffer.
Aye,
well, that's it. It's a case of a bit of extra stuff. But I was doing that today, by the way. I was like, if I lost Dixie, it's like, fucking hell, man, I'm stuck with this wee wanker.
Aye.
I'm like, what am I going to do? And I used to just get back in my save as well. But, I mean, I tried my best with Diddy. I liked his Mario Kart game and all that, but it was lacking in the whole kind of fucking, like, being able to do things department in this game. But it was good, because he jumped about behind you, and he's good. I suppose he's right behind you. He's like...
Oh, that's a couple of bleeps there for you, Mick.
I'm trying to sing his praises in some way, but I'm just...
I'll tell you one thing I like about Diddy. On the odd chance that I lost Dixie and I finished a level with Diddy, I thought, I can persevere here. Maybe it's one of the animal-based levels or something where I don't so much need Dixie. And I go to the end and... You know when you get the bonus at the end of the level, Dixie will play an electric guitar, or
amazing.
Diddy will whap on a pair of shades and pull out a boombox. I like that.
I like that.
A wee kind of breakdance thing, wee b-boy thing.
It made me laugh basically every time.
It looks like Morpheus in the Matrix when he puts his shades on. It's class, man. And then, as you said, is it Dixie? She pulls out a guitar and plays this my wee tune. Which is sublime, it's class. I'll give you that one, I'm converted. What I also loved about this game is, wait for it, there's a bountiful amount of mounts in this game.
Yes, man, Andy, I did not even realise the amount of mounts that you get in this.
Oh, it was incredible. See that spider you ride, man? That was cool as fuck. Did you know that
spider's
good.
It's clear, it's my favourite mount in this game by a country mile.
Spider's good. Spider's the coolest character in this game for me, man.
It's got 8 pairs of trainers on.
Ah, it's brilliant. That's what I was saying. It looks like Toe Jam. It's got heavy 90s Toe Jam vibes. I would play a game with that spider. Has he got a name or anything?
The mounts all have wee names. I don't know what they are.
Right, find out. I'm going to find out because I fucking love him. And I wanted to stay on him.
Now, you were saying that you kind of didn't really like the pre-rendered 3D look, and I was originally like this myself, but what kind of won me round was the designs of the characters. I think everyone just had so much personality. Like, the wee spider had a lot of personality. I liked the baddies. I liked the crocodiles with the peg legs and the pirate level.
Oh.
I think everyone just looks class.
Are you ready, by the way?
Go for it.
What are we doing?
His name is Squitter.
Squitter the spider needs his own fucking game.
I had a bad case of the squitters after my Christmas dinner.
But Mick, you're right with the baddie design. The first time I saw the crocodile with the peg leg, I paused the game and had a laugh. That's a level of personality that you don't often get in platformers.
Aye, like you get the wee guy too that hides in the...
The barrel cunt, and it goes mental. Oh, he's the worst.
It's like a bendy springs out of Sponic where it makes you think it's like just a wee innocent thing and then it fucking jumps out at
you. That's a funny one, because you think it's going to kill you, but then it just bounces off you and causes chaos. You might fall, but you won't actually die, so you get a momentarily...
He's annoying as fuck.
You momentarily shite yourself.
You get that wee fud that fucking rushes at you, and you've got to make him jump in the lava. That's always good.
See the thing about falling and getting knocked into places and stuff in this? One thing I found about Donkey Kong Country 2, and one of the things I loved about it, is that all the wee bonus levels and secrets and stuff like that, they're no spread thin. I wasn't particularly looking for them, and I seem to find them an awful lot, and often through failing. often through getting lost in a level and then encountering a barrel, and all of a sudden they'd get one of these wee, it plays this mad wee tune, and you get like find the token or whatever, or kill all the baddies or whatever.
Is that, have you got to get the word Kong? It's like wee support this guy, and then it takes you to a, it either gives you a life, it takes you to a bonus stage where you've got to get a token, and the tokens you can use for Donkey Kong's game show.
Swanky Kong, is he called?
I like Swanky Kong.
Fuck those, man. It's another monkey, but dressed up monkeys that all look the same. But this one, I quite like. He's a game show host.
Aye.
Dale Winton or something. I don't know why Dale Winton was the first one that came to mind, but anyway. And he will ask you questions about a previous level. Mm-hmm. So it'll be like, how many rungs did the ladder have in level one when you climbed up the rope swing or something?
When you first encounter him, it's like, he'll ask you the names of levels, and there'll be like three similar ones. It'll be like, is it called like Glimmer's Grotto or Grinner's Grove or whatever? Or he'll be like, what was the first baddie in the game? Was it a bug or a rat or something like that?
Multiple choice stuff. A wee bit like Chef's Love Shack, man.
Aye.
But I enjoyed that. I thought it was good crack, man.
I liked meeting all these wee fucking uncles and aunties or whatever they are. They all had a bit of crack. The one that gives you hints and kind of breaks the fourth wall and talks about how shite the game is and that, he's quite good.
Aye.
Aye, he's nuts, aye. I couldn't get by him, so like, there was a wee quip we could do to skip him, just go over the tap room. He's like, you're not getting by me, that, because you've not got enough fucking tokens like that. And you're like, aye, is that right, aye? Is that right, son? And then you just go off the overworld and you can just kind of jump over him and then move on.
Andy, you've talked on previous episodes about, and I know the English are not your favourite guys, right? You've got a respect for the British games industry, am I fair to say?
Aye, I would say so.
An air that their games have about them, a certain cheeky sense of humour.
Aye.
They don't take themselves too seriously. There's an ethos, a kind of fun, and a wee bit of a kind of anarchic kind of Rick Mayall about them.
There's a sense of irony about them. They don't take themselves too seriously at times.
This is full of that.
Aye, definitely. Right down to like Donkey Kong's patter.
Aye.
It's definitely got the air of a British game. This is Rare that made this game. Now, was there any British involvement at all, or were they just inspired by that type of thing?
This team was all based down south somewhere. This was British made.
You can tell, because it's got all that kind of thing where... the game is very serious in its design. It's made to be a platformer that's going toe-to-toe with some of the best platformers ever made in terms of movement and design, but it's also taking the piss out of itself as well.
Aye.
Whereas the Japanese games sort of taking the piss out of it, it never happen. It's very serious. I mean, you've got a plumber with a fucking hat on jumping about with his brother getting down pipes, but it's all very serious.
There is humour, but it's kind of not our style of humour. It doesn't really translate well.
It's like your literal humour.
I just found with this, the variety in levels as well. Don't get me wrong, this isn't a cakewalk. This gets hard as fuck, right? I had to save state in that to get through some of these levels. They get really difficult. But the variety in them was magic. You will get a couple of levels that kick your arse, and then you'll get a fun level that's based around maybe... the bird character that fires out eggs, or maybe you get a shot of the snake that jumps, or the spider that we love so much, or, you know, you get a level where you've got to wall jump a lot. It's like a beehive, and you stick to honey. It's great. Or my favourite, and I'm going to actually shout out, I know this is Andy's game, and this might be bad form by me taking the DJ card on it, but the guy who made all the tunes for Donkey Kong Country is an English fella called David Wise, and very famously in the first Donkey Kong Country game, there is a water level, can't remember what it's called, aquatic something, and it's got this pure cracker ambient tune, and for Donkey Kong Country 2, he designed another ambient banger to be used as a water level, and then ended up no using it on that, and instead using it on this level called Bramble Blast, which a lot of people think is the hardest level in the game, which is a big maze, you know, with those barrels that alternate directions and you fire out of them. It's a giant maze full of them to start to finish. I actually found that one of the more enjoyable levels, but it's a tune called Bramble Blast, if we can have that in, Mick.
Yeah, play that funky music,
shout out to David Wise, because it's another fucking masterpiece.
David Wise is a bit of a genius, another really inspirational video game composer. Like many of these kind of British demo scene veterans, they managed to use a lot of kind of technical tricks and wizardry to kind of get the most out of a console. He done a thing that had kind of hadn't been done before on the SNES sound chip. He took an inspiration for a synthesizer called the Korg Wave Station, which could make these like really long and evolving kind of ambient sounds, even though the SNES could only use very short sounds. Really, he kind of weaved them together and made this amazing ambience and two of the best like video game tracks of all time, this one and the one on Donkey Kong Country 1. And amazing as well for the fact that they kind of don't fit in with the soundtrack at all. Like, the rest of it's all just funky, fun jungle times, and then you get this fucking heartbreaking, beautiful ambience. It's amazing.
It's not as good at using kind of orchestral samples to create ambience.
Aye, it sounds that you would call what you call a pad in a kind of electronic music. It's like a chord, a kind of long sustained chord that just kind of sits under everything and sounds lovely. And he was a kind of, he managed to get the SNES to like pull off those sounds. And aye, yeah, tunes are cracker.
It's a level about shooting yourself out of several barrels. So you think maybe some carnival thing rather than this fucking pure, like, if I was in a chill out room and on a badgeon and this came on, I would greet. I would be like clutching my heart, going, yeah, this is exactly what I needed.
I'm with you, man. I used that many save states. I was starting to look and see like Ray Winston. But fucking honestly, man, it was really difficult. It felt like an arcade game at times.
Aye.
You were talking Mega Man earlier. You keep fucking up and you go, right, I'm gonna go and get an R bash, I'm gonna keep fucking trying to get by this fucking thing.
Aye.
Things that kept showing up through the game was the wasps.
They're hard.
The cunts. You just can't beat them unless you've got a barrel. Sometimes it just got you by your boys, man, and there's no way to get by them without Dixie, and it becomes a bit of a cluster fucking annoys you, but there's always a way to get by them. I didn't know you could kill me with barrels until kind of far in.
No, I think the red wasps are unkillable. The yellow wasps you can kill with barrels and with a parrot.
Parrot's good.
No, I know you're a big sprite man. The bosses in this are pretty good, aren't they?
I did like the bosses. I thought that the first boss with the crow and the eggs.
Aye.
He had a lot of humour in him, didn't he? He was a funny cunt.
Looking fucker.
Aye, he gets more and more raging as you kind of smash those up.
He just wanted to take the heat right off you, didn't he?
Mm.
He fucking about.
There's a good wee surprise pickup in that. If you manage to get in his nest, you get a wee token.
Aye. Oh. If you press a certain button, then the monkeys will give each other a caracol bag. And then you can sort of fling the other monkey. But that's really good for accessing all sorts of secrets in the game.
Yeah.
Like extra barrels and things like that. This game is just, it's filled to the brim with invention, fun, secrets. I can't sing its praises enough.
I think we've played a few platformers, including, I would probably say, Vectorman, where you can say the graphics are spot on, the music's spot on, the gameplay engine, amazing, the level design lets it down. This one is not one of those games. This one has fucking, the levels are all cracking, really inventive, challenging but not unfair. Hunters are secrets and extra paths, and that you sometimes stumble across and feel quite clever. Like, it's all very well put together.
Every level is just a series of scenarios that they sat down and went, right, what are we doing here? And then what are we doing next? Everything's all set up in a kind of tight fashion that sort of becomes intuitive.
It's like pick one kind of mechanic and then explore it and see how far you can take it.
Aye, they've done one thing at a time and they've took their time on each thing, and it's sufficiently difficult, and then you move on to the next bit. It's like a series of just like fun tasks at your levels.
Super Mario World-esque.
It's cheeky and it's tongue-in-cheek and nothing is wasted. Like, they did not half-arse this at all. It's cracker. Everything about it is very tightly designed, as you're saying. This was something that I was going to hit out with that is a controversial statement, and by all means, listeners, come at me. This is better than Super Mario World for me. I like basically every Sonic game more than Super Mario World. Super Mario World is a tremendous game, but for me, it's not the be-all and end-all sometimes that people make it out to be. I would rather play Donkey Kong Country 2 Super Mario World at any point.
Definitely got something going for it that's hard to find in other places. This game's usually cited in like people's top five platformers. And
see, I never even knew that.
It's a big hitter, man. But as I said, it always went under the radar for me, because I was like you. I was more of a Sega platforming guy. I'd be up for looking more into this game and its sequel and the original as well.
We've kind of blundered in terms of looking at Donkey Kong Country as a series because we've started with the best one rather than building up to the best one, I think.
Aye, could be. Could have done that. But does the third one now just get ridiculous and it just starts like involving like rhinoceroses and that and shit?
Well, one of the things about the third one is we still get Dixie, but the sidekick character is like an annoying baby that a lot of people don't like, called Kiddy Kong. But I suppose you could just patch Kiddy Kong and play as Dixie all the time. We'll get a third one a run out, maybe.
Why would you name your kid Kiddy Kong if he's inevitably going to grow up and be an adult?
I don't know.
What was it with Nintendo and annoying babies in 1995, man?
They were all getting into their, like, 30s and having wins.
Aye.
That Yoshi's Island noise is still fucking the worst thing ever.
I can hear it now. I fucking wish I never even brought it up. This game is a stonker. Aye, it's a good one.
Aye.
It's a platformer that I can pick holes in a platform and movement engine. I can't in this one. The only thing I would say is, if there's a way to complete the tasks in this game without the helicopter powered, I've yet to find it. But it might just be a skill issue with me.
I don't know if Dixie is the easy mode character's air quote, but I tended to just use her all the time because I needed the helicopter here.
Aye, me too. I need my stabilisers on when I'm playing this game.
Aye. Well, I suppose that's that then. Pretty much three glowing reviews. Vector Man maybe not so much glowing, but not slated either. We've started off 2024 quite well, I think. Now, to see how it's going to get worse, let's go on to our games for next time. Mr. McCormick, we'll start with you. What have you got for Mr. Andy Mack?
Right, you two can go first because I'm kind of metagaming this, basing my choice on what the other two are in terms of episode
smart
balance.
A smart ass.
I'm being a smart ass.
Walter White coward dot gif. Right, okay, I'll dive in. McCormick, do you like Chrono Trigger?
I love Chrono Trigger.
Does that bear shit in the woods?
Do you like Japan only Satellavision games?
when I get them working, absolutely.
Well, you've got Radical Dreamers, which
amazing.
Is a text adventure sequel to Chrono Trigger, which a lot of the ideas for then went on and got used for Chrono Cross. But before Chrono Cross was a thing, during the kind of wilderness years where there was no Chrono Trigger sequel, Radical Dreamers ended up getting an English translation and all that. And I played it during my emulation days. It was probably the first visual novel I ever played. But I think you'll like it. And the main man fucking does the tunes for it. Mitsuda, he's back. He's got the tunes on the go. Aye, that's a lot. Mr. MacArthur, give him my death sentence. What have I got?
Right, listen, I was in two minds with you, man. I had one up my sleeve, and I've had like, a last-minute substitution. I've brought Ole Gunnar Solskjaer off the bench. I'm going to give you one of my favourite platformers for the Mega Drive.
Oh.
A late platformer. We were talking about earlier on, Vector Man is sort of in the same vein as it.
Right, right.
It kind of gives you the style of a substance. I'm going to give you Toy Story for the Mega Drive.
Ah, right, okay. I've got a wee bit of history with this, but I've never fully gave it a true run out, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
Pizza Planet level, fucking magic.
Is this some kind of weird FPS? No, we'll save it for next right. time, obviously. Right. Mick, what have you got for Andy?
Right, so what I've settled on is a game that sometimes just comes into my mind unbidden, with happy memories attached. Spyro the Dragon for the PS1.
Oh, yeah. Fucking magic.
Old man, classic.
25 years I've been joking to play this game. Never done it because I would never turn to the fucking bastard dark fucking side of Sony PlayStation. But I'll do it for you guys.
You'll probably like it quite a lot. Spyro's a classic.
Let's go for it.
Okay, well, all that's left to say for me is up the workers.
I have to go to the Mega.
Go faster, faster, cheese, faster.
See you later.